I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for another episode of It's All About Food, and we are live here on January 29, 2013. I'm in the studio here in Manhattan, and it was fun walking out to the studio today. When you're dressed for 20 or 30 degree weather, 45 degrees feels really, really comfortable and nice. It's a nice day today. And it's great to get out in it. All right. Food is so important. And I want to know, how did we get so detached, so separated from where our food comes from? How is it that most of us don't have a clue what's in the food we eat and don't even care? How did it come to this? And how did we get so far away from what is fresh and natural and delicious? I don't have the answers to those questions, but we're going to talk about something really, really basic today. Fruit. And yet fruit has so many different, delicious, scandalous, romantic, criminal aspects to it, and we're going to get right to it. I'm going to bring on my first guest, Adam Gollner. He's the author of The Fruit Hunters, A Story of Nature, Obsession, Commerce, and Adventure. His writing appears in the New York Times, Gourmet, Bon Appetit, Orion, The Globe and Mail, Maclean's, and Good Magazine, among others. Welcome to It's All About Food, Adam. Okay, so we're going to wait for Adam for a moment, and while we do, I'm going to talk about some of my memories with fruit, because a lot of things that happen in this wonderful, wonderful book, The Fruit Hunters, that Adam wrote, I really related to. For example, I think there's something really primal about eating food that is really fresh. What I mean by freshly harvested, freshly picked. And maybe some of us have lost it, but I know that when I have an opportunity to pick fresh food, there's something really deep inside me that gets really excited. Adam, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hi, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I loved reading your book, really underlined, loved reading your book, The Fruit Hunters.
Thank you.
I don't think I'm a fruit hunter, but I do have some passion about fruit. And one of the things that excited me was how you described certain experiences that I've had with fruit so perfectly. And, you know, you want to think, I guess, that you're unique, and I realize I'm not. But some of them were really interesting, and I'll bring them up sometime along this program. But what I was just talking about was when I was young, maybe at about 11 years old, we moved into a new house, and the backyard and beyond hadn't been developed. And there were woods and blackberry bushes everywhere. And I think they were blackberries, not black raspberries, but I don't know anymore. And, yes.
Where did you live? Where was it?
Long Island, New York.
Wow.
And they were everywhere, and I was just... Well, to start with, it was amazing that I was allowed to just roam the woods and nobody knew where I was or where I was going. I don't think parents would do that often anymore. But I would just pick tons of them, and I just felt, it just was just so magical to have free fruit just growing for me to pick until I had enough. What a concept.
Yeah, that's beyond a concept. That's just the most incredible thing. I mean, that is a universal childhood experience, I think. I think that even though yours is particular to you, I think many kids have these moments in nature with fruits. And I think that those moments are amazing and they mark us. And most of us have some story like that. It may not be with blackberries, it may be with some totally different exotic fruit, depending on what part of the world people are in, but yeah, I mean, I just, that feeling that you're describing is magical. That feeling was really what inspired me to write this book, that feeling.
Yeah, well, I had a couple more, and I'm just going to get them all out, and then I'm going to get more out of you. But I went to Costa Rica in 2004, I think, and really fell in love. And I fell in love in the undeveloped areas, not the touristy, Americanized areas, but the undeveloped areas where the trees are just pregnant and bloating with ripe, luscious fruits. Mango, it depends on the season, of course, and what would be dropping all over the place. And I thought, I want this. And I ultimately ended buying property there because I just was overwhelmed with all of these juicy, sweet things that I had never, some I knew and some I had never seen before. It was just a paradise, Eden.
For sure, for sure. I mean, that's another lovely story. That I feel like that's a lucky story. That's a lucky story for a traveler. That's one of the great delights of travel, is to end up in some altered state on another part of the planet and surrounded by fruits you've never imagined could possibly exist. But, wow, that's a great part of being an adult.
Well, it brought back the child in me in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, for sure. It's like a direct connection.
You just brought up altered state, and you've brought that up a number of times in your book when you talked about fruitarians and breatharians and different people that followed a path that had to do with fruit, and ultimately some of the fruit was hallucinogenic, but fruit, some kinds, can lead you to a different state of mind.
Yeah, I think that they can. I mean, there's a lot of possible ways in which you can do that. I mean, there's neurochemical ways. As you said, there's hallucinogenic fruits, there's toxic fruits, there's fruits that can kill you. There are fruits that are lethal out there, and there's fruits that just kind of unlock certain molecular pathways in your brain that are maybe exciting and maybe terrifying. I mean, yeah, there's a whole weird thing there. I think what I was excited about most of all wasn't something quite as psychoactive, mm-hmm. but more the sort of things that you described in those two stories, that sense of discovery and the sense that the fact that this stuff just comes out of the planet is so unexpected and mind-blowing, and it tastes sweet. And I mean, I think of, can I tell you a little story that your blackberry story reminds me of?
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, as you were saying it, I just totally had a flashback to my own childhood, which is we had a kind of woods next to my home as well, and we also had a vacant lot on the other side. And I remember, you know, roaming around the woods all the time. And I also remember once just kind of hanging out on the vacant lot. There was a trampoline there, I think. We played on this trampoline. But what I remember is that one August, the whole vacant lot became covered in wild strawberries, little small, we'd been playing on that grass all summer, and then all of a sudden there were wild, like the grass was full of wild strawberries. And what a crazy thing, you know. And you just even as an adult, I think to see that is a sense of, you know, marvel and wonder and astonishment.
Natural candy.
As a kid, you just can't believe that the world could be anything better.
You know, it's like natural candy, and you had a great line in the book. You had a lot of great lines in the book, but Willy Wonka has nothing on Mother Nature.
Oh yeah.
All those crazy candies Willy Wonka created in his candy shop, and yet all of the fruits that you described in the book don't hold a candle to those little concoctions he made up.
Yeah, his are pretty marvelous, but I mean, it's like there's a certain kind of, I mean, I guess it depends, you know, maybe some people would find man-made creations more interesting than what nature came up with. But I think most people just don't realize what nature came up with, because most of that stuff is not available for sale and is not in our supermarkets, and people have never come across it and they just don't know about it. They just don't know it exists. So that's another thing I think this book does, is it says, do you realize there's so much stuff out there that we've never heard of? Because I didn't realize that when I started the book. You know, I had no idea. And then I learned about them, and to me, they are so much more fascinating than anything we could put together with our minds and our machines and our technology. I mean, how could we ever come up with something like a durian?
Well, okay, you mentioned durian, and I have to admit that I was on an all-raw food diet for about 2 years. First, I'm a vegan, and I'm still a vegan, and I will be for whatever. I'm committed to that. But I tried all raw food for about 2 years, and I felt like I was going to be ostracized from the community because I did not like durian.
Well, where did you eat it?
That's a good... I think I might have had some in Costa Rica. I'm not sure, but I've had... You know, we get the frozen variety here in the United States because we can't get fresh, and I would have the result of a defrosted frozen durian. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gross. I think that's gross, personally. But I think that if you go to Singapore or Malaysia, Borneo, Thailand, and you have a durian there, it's not gross. It's amazing. It's a good thing. And Alfred Russel Wallace, the guy who discovered the theory of evolution at the same time as Darwin, he said, way back then, he said that durian is something that's worth a trip to the Far East to experience. You know, it's worth going there just to try a durian. And I'd say the same is true today. Like, it's a fruit that isn't made for transporting around the world, and most fruits aren't. Most fruits are made to be appreciated at a certain moment, at a certain height of ripeness, at a certain place, at a certain time, and that's part of the reason the book is about fruit hunters. It's about people who are trying to have that experience, and we can have that experience in our backyard as well, but it's pretty rare that we have that experience in a grocery store.
The other story that really blew my mind was when you were talking about the Mara des Bois strawberry in France. I was in France a few years ago in the Bordeaux region visiting a friend, and we went to the local market in the morning, and I bought a strawberry, and it was exactly as you had someone describe it in your book. It was the most fragrant, incredible, delicious experience, and it must have been one of those.
Yeah. Very possible. You do see the Mara des Bois in France a lot, and man, those are when you have a good one, because they're not all. That's kind of the beauty about them. They're not all the same. But sometimes in a box you'll get a couple that are just like perfect. And I don't even know. I for some reason, for me, they make me think of Dimetapp, like that medicine that costs medicine. Like there's something like there's this weird grape thing in it, like I don't even, there's no point trying to compare it to things, because it really is something you can only understand by eating yourself, and that's part of the fun of the book, is trying to come up with ways of making people feel like they're in some way aware of what you're speaking about when they can't really be. I mean, there's no way to tell somebody what a pineapple is like if they've never had a pineapple. Like, you can say what it's similar to, but they'll never really know unless they taste it themselves. And that's something I saw firsthand with the miracle fruit. Like, trying to explain it to people, they just didn't. They never get it, really.
Now, this is the fruit that you eat, and it doesn't taste like much when you eat it, but then afterwards it makes really sour foods taste sweet?
That is that one. And I remember, like, probably the best example of this. I mean, it's like this always. You kind of talk about it. You're like, it's a little red berry. It looks like kind of the size of a small olive, but it's red. It has a pit. You bite into it. You swish it around. You spit out the seed. And then you eat sour things, and they become transformed into sweetness. Like, they taste very, very sweet. And, you know, you tell that to people, and they're like, oh, well, I kind of think I understand what you're saying, but you know, they don't really have any idea what you're talking about until they try it. And their mind is blown. It's always the same. It's always the same thing. And I remember doing this one interview. I think it was the first interview for the book. It was for a show called Democracy Now.
Oh, yeah.
With Amy...
Amy Goodman. Amy Goodman. We love Amy Goodman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she... I think it's on YouTube. And you know, if you want to go see what I'm talking about, it's amazing. Because she, you know, she was kind of like, all right, what are you talking about? You know, kind of, you know, no idea what you're talking about. And then she tried it, and she was just like, why didn't you say that? Why didn't you tell me what you were talking about? You know, it's just people cannot get it unless they try it. And yeah, anyways, that's part of the fun of writing that book.
I can talk about food all day, and I do, and I love food, and I love good food, and I love whole plant foods when they're really fresh, and you can really experience what nature intended, but there's a lot more to this book, and there's trade barriers and smugglers and seed registries. There's so many little things I wanted to touch on. Guano wars. And if you want to know what that's about, you'll have to read the book, because I don't think it's an appropriate... No, it's about, I guess, what was it, the 1800s or something, where people were shipping bird poop in order to fertilize their fields?
Yeah, fertilizer. That's it. I mean, my favorite fertilizer is the remains of mummified cats from Egypt. They brought these boatloads of cats to Britain from Egypt when they'd excavated the pyramids and just, you know, kind of ground up the mummies and spread them on fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's probably some value to that. There's probably nutrients in them that are good for the soil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... May I ask a question? I'm not sure how long we're supposed to do the interview for, but I could.
We have about 10 more minutes.
Okay, good. Shall I tell you another story?
Yeah,
about mummies?
I love stories.
In the next book I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
I have a book coming out in August. It's my new book. It's called The Book of Immortality, and it's about the idea of immortality, and that's an idea that the fruit hunters explores, fruits being symbols of eternal life in religions. And I remember as I was finishing the book, I was like, what is eternal life? Like, what is that? Mm-hmm. Where did we get that idea? You know, what is that? Is it an idea? Is it a thing? And so, you know, that became the start of a new book, which is sort of a continuation in some ways of The Fruit Hunters. And, I'm just in the final moments of copy editing it right now, and I was looking over this one passage that connects to the mummy, the mummified remains being spread as fertilizer. People also took that as a kind of anti-aging pill in several hundred years ago in Britain. Like, people would actually eat the leftovers of mummies, like the ground up, like the things that we have done trying to live forever or trying to make our fields grow better. It's fascinating.
It is, and you talk about that a lot in the first book too. One of the reasons why I read your book was because I was talking about bananas a while ago on my show and talked about how. The banana, as we know it, is probably going to disappear because of a virus that's going on. You talked about it in your book. And one of my listeners said, oh, you have to read The Fruit Hunters. So I want to thank my listeners for that. And please keep telling me who I should be following and reading.
Those are good listeners.
But every food, I like to say this, every food has a story. The bananas have a story. And there are so many other foods in your book that have their own crazy, interesting stories. But I just wanted to get a little bit about the difficult things that go on in the world when it has to do with fruits. You talk about how a lot of drugs get into the Western world through fruit.
Yeah, I mean, what an interesting thing that drugs are often sent from Central American companies, countries, by companies that also ship other substances in the fruit crate boxes. And I mean, that's a perfect example of something that you don't, as a reporter, you don't expect to come across that story. You know, you just say, oh, fruits are interesting. There's different fruits that grow in different parts of the world. Like when you went to Costa Rica, you discovered these new fruits. When people go to different countries, they see these things. And that's what started the Fruit Hunters for me. But then as I deepened my research, I kept learning things that were so weird and puzzling. And I guess that brings us into what my editor and I called the dark side of fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a dark side, you know, whether it's the use of fruit shipments to smuggle drugs, or whether it's the use of toxic chemicals in the growing process. And I mean, there's all sorts of things that I didn't expect that I would learn about, and some of them were pretty
not very nice. There are so many different fruits and foods out there. Many of them are already gone, and won't ever come back, and some of them we're destroying, and I imagine there are new ones that are happening all the time. You talk about hybrid fruits that are made, the whole concept of hybridization, it's from dusting pollen from the stamen of one flower onto the pistil of another and then growing out a resultant seed. This is natural in a way. I imagine nature does this slowly, and we speed up the process, and there's a lot of different new foods that have come out as a result. I'm comfortable with that. I'm not as comfortable with going into a chromosome and planting a gene to make new foods.
Mm-hmm. yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a chapter, I think, that takes place at the Zeiger family farm, Zeiger Genetics in Modesto, California. They're a family, it's a family-run operation, and they just, you know, kind of take bits, male and female flower bits, and kind of push them together,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, create little fruit babies and see what happens. And that is what we could call kind of natural selection. I mean, even though it's artificial selection, even though it's humans doing it, it's kind of what birds and bees do. They kind of brush up against flower parts and knock them into each other so that the flower becomes pollinated and gives birth to a fruit baby. So I think that's natural, yeah. I think what they're doing is it's useful and it's fascinating, and it's a great, strange phenomenon. But then, yeah, the laboratories that are, you know, splicing resistant genes, that's a little freakier,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, we don't really know. You know, I spoke to people on both sides of that debate, and, you know, I mean, it really, really rapidly becomes clear that we cannot resolve that. You know, like, our food system is so complicated.
Yes.
We hope we have this sense that, you know, if we just put our minds to it, we'll find solutions and we'll figure it out, and we can have a way that it'll just be all good. And then you kind of start speaking to people and you realize just how complicated and interlocked everything is, and it's just, you kind of run away from it screaming and saying,
yeah,
oh,
well,
man.
We all feel very frustrated because the corporations pretty much have control and make all the decisions and sway our representatives, and it can be really, really frustrating. One of the things is there are foods that I remember when I was young, like watermelons with seeds in them, and they're really hard to find. But I was kind of comforted to read that there are people with all kinds of seeds from foods from long ago, that maybe they're not all lost.
Yes, the preservationists are there. Those are the kind of unsung heroes of the fruit world. They are the real fruit hunters, these passionate amateurs who have collections in their backyards, or even those who work for the United States Department of Agriculture and maintain germplasm repositories. You know, there's a great character, Richard Campbell, and his partner, Norris, in Florida, who have this collection of mangoes, the American government's mango collection. And they're just these two wonderful, intrepid adventurers going around the world in search of germplasm. And these people are so amazing. And with them, you feel that they are telling us something. And what they're telling us is that we're in it together, and that we are part of nature, and that we have a role, and that there are things we can do. And it's a very good story. Their story is a good story.
I like good stories. When you mentioned mangoes, it reminded me in the book of your discussing how nuclear agreements between India and Canada and India and the United States had a lot to do with how many mangoes we saw in our countries.
Yeah, that's a strange story. And that story, I've been told that story may be in reality a little more nuanced than it's portrayed in the book. I had gone off a few news reports that were maybe a little sensationalist, but the sensationalist version of that story is still probably generally valid. But it kind of gets into the intricacies of global trade and how India bought nuclear reactors from Canada for a while, and throughout that time, America said, "Okay, we're not taking your mangoes. We won't. we won't buy any of your produce. I don't think there's. I mean, maybe there were some things that were coming in, but I don't think so. Like it's kind of interesting how few countries get to export their food into America, at least their fresh food. And so India certainly wasn't able to export its mangoes, but then they signed a kind of business deal with George Bush to buy some nuclear reactors or some form of nuclear technology from America. And I guess this was about 7 years ago now. And part of the deal was that America would allow the mangoes back in. And I think the mangoes needed to be irradiated.
Oh, yeah, that's another horrible subject.
Which means they get essentially nuked, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Like there's some form of some nuclear technology that is, you know, killing little insects that may be living in the skin and doing who knows what else. But that's just a weird story of
There's a lot of problems with imported food, and one of them is they have to be irradiated to kill those little bugs.
A lot of Central American mangoes that come into America are boiled or given what's called like hot water vapor treatment. Like they're like kind of blasted with hot steam. So they're kind of like cooked a little bit.
Yeah. And I was surprised to hear that, but then not surprised, because now I know why the mangoes don't taste like the mangoes I get here in the United States don't taste anything like the ones that I get in Costa Rica that have just fallen from the tree. One more little question. There's a film coming out called The Fruit Hunters, or it came out in Canada, and we should be able to see it sometime here in the United States.
Yeah, it is currently at film festivals, and it just played at the Palm Springs Film Festival, and it's playing at the Berlin Film Festival very soon, and it's going to be coming out, I think, probably in a couple of months. It's a film that has many of the stories that are in the book. It's inspired by the book. It's based on the book, but it's also its own story. It has some characters who are not in the book, and I think it's wonderful.
Adam,
you'll see it soon.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for joining me, and it's all about food. I love this book. Did I say that? I really did, and I hope everybody reads it. It's a great one. Okay, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, of course, and we will be right back with Jill Eckhart from PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Stay tuned.